listening to the Fantasy Movie League podcast, the free fantasy game for Hollywood. Pick 8 movies for your own fantasy cineplex each week, earn points from real weekend box office results. Compete for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com.
This is Wednesday, October 20th, 2016, and it's week 8 of the Fantasy Movie League fall season. I'm Pete Johnson, the Fantasy Movie League nerd, and I'm joined by Patrick Reardon, the box office guy. And Patrick, can you stop me next time when I fall in love with a toy-driven movie?
You know, I thought I tried to, and I got plenty of things wrong last week. The one thing I did nail right on the head is that Max Steel is far more Jim and the Holograms than it is a box office sleeper. So at least I got that one right, and I didn't play it on any screens.
Yeah, so my apologies to the 542 other players that listened to me and played a screen of The Accountant and 7 screens of Max Steel. It ended up being the most popular lineup, and that created a $31.5 million delta, biggest we've seen in a little while.
Between That's quite a swing.
Was. Between that and The Perfect Cinema, which was 2 screens of The Accountant, 3 screens of Middle School, and 3 screens of Don't Breathe. So why did The Accountant overperform so much? So ProBoxOffice.com pegged it at $16 million, but it was 24/7, a surprise by anybody's count, right?
I think there's 2 reasons for it. I think the first of which is if you look at like maybe the top 100 grossing movies of 2016 so far, you see just a scrap heap of just failed reboots and lackluster sequels and then unnecessary remakes. I think just the fact that it was an original title in a year where we've seen just so many retreads kind of helped it stand out a little bit. And the other thing was like, it's often, like I've said this before, whenever a movie doesn't perform, people blame the marketing. I think this is a situation where you should give the marketing a lot of praise. I think Warner Brothers knew exactly what they had. They didn't try to push this as like an awards contender like Argo or anything like that. They went straight after the action fans. I saw a lot of ads during NFL games. I think they knew exactly what the movie was. They knew who to market it to, and they showed up last weekend, and they had a little bit of a winner.
Yay, marketing.
So, sometimes it pays off. It's often the easy thing. Like in an election, people say it's the media's fault. And then when a movie bombs, they say it was the marketing. That's usually not the case. It's usually a bad movie. But I think the marketing definitely helped here.
Well, the overall standings didn't shake up too much. I personally fell out of the top 100 probably for good for the season. I'm in 300 some odd.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's no attitude. You can get right back in
there. It's okay. There's still plenty of weeks to go here, right? We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more weeks. It's still anybody's game, but right now it's CC Ziegfeld's game, who's in first place with $538 million and change. The Gabrera Redemption right behind with $532 and change. The DZ Blex with $529 million, and then a whole lot of people with $526 million, $525 million. So yeah, at the top there's all kinds of bunching, and yeah, I thought it was worth a week taking a chance, and I could not have been more wrong. And you know, just like in life and in FML, I paid the price, and now I'm looking up at a whole lot of people.
But I don't think anybody's going to be running away with things, because like, as we'll get into in a little bit, 5 new releases this week, and with like no real juggernauts, there's a lot of game left to be played. So I think we're gonna have some weird weeks upcoming.
Now, what also starts this week, though, is the Sing League. We had the second half league started last week, but if you get it on the Sing lead, and there's a post on the chatter that's pinned right now. So the winner of this one is going to win a trip to see the Sing premiere here in the LA area, and it runs weeks. I think it's 3, or I think it runs through week 12 or so. You can find the details on the Sing contest premiere rules, but anytime there's a trip involved to go see a movie premiere, that's always goodness for Fantasy Movie League players.
Again, we've had a lot of the guests who've won previous contests who have come out to LA or to the El Capitan to go see a movie out here for the premiere, and I think it's been like an 100% approval rating.
Yeah, so far nobody's come out and said, yeah, that was a lousy time. There was the one in Vegas for Bourne, there was one at the El Capitan with Pete's Dragon. This is our second or third one in involving a Universal film, I think. So Sing League, take a look at the chatter for that. Now
we've got a fun city. If someone else is going to pay for it, then yes, it's definitely a cool place to come to. So definitely get in that Sing League.
Now, I don't know if you saw this on the chatter, but friend of the program, Angry Geek, ran a pretty cool thing where he ran a small meetup of Chicago FML player horror fans. So a couple people showed up to that, and he sent me a couple of pictures. But I was like, the fan-generated content. That was cool to get some people together in person.
It's always cool. And like, again, you never know where these pockets of FML players are going to be. We're kind of all over the place.
Now, speaking of people, so last week we wrapped up the Ben Affleck bracket, and this week we've got Mr. Tom Cruise.
I mean, last week I think the FML community did a good job. It was Argo and Gone Girl in the finals, both top seeds. Argo won, like, no qualms about that one. And nothing against Mr. Affleck. We've got a slightly bigger star this week. We've got Tom Cruise, who's got one of the most impressive movie star resumes of all time, and we're currently in our Elite Eight, so that one's been playing out kind of in an interesting way. Like, apparently the FML community thinks that his performance in Minority Report was better than his, like, you know, award-winning work in Born on the 4th of July. I don't agree with that, but what are you going to do?
Yeah,
have a favorite?
I do. The one that I saw fall that was my favorite was The Firm, is probably my favorite Tom Cruise role.
I think it went around, and then like it came against.
It lost to Rain Man
or Risky Business in the second round, but I'm not going to argue with that. Those are all really good movies, and I think when you just look at all the movies in that bracket, like even his stinkers, there aren't too many of them there, and his bad movies are better than a lot of actors' good movies, so it's pretty impressive. You can put all the Scientology and all the craziness stuff, like, you know, that people seem to have this problem with Tom Cruise, and just look at the work, it's pretty impressive. So people seem to be having a lot of fun with the bracket.
Well, of the movies left, I kind of like Interview with a Vampire of the eight movies that are left right now.
Then you better get on and start voting some more, because I believe it is trailing at the moment.
Yeah, I did vote later today, and it is trailing as we speak, 163 votes to 23 votes.
Well, we're taping on Wednesday evening here, and like by Thursday morning, who knows? If you get out there and vote, you could possibly change the tide.
I think we'll be Lestatless probably by this time tomorrow.
But remember, people were up in arms and, like, you know, that he was horribly miscast in that. And, like, you know, I had my doubts as well. But when I saw it, I'm like, okay, like he pulled that off.
Yeah,
I was impressed.
He absolutely did. And the thing I like about, I mean, he plays the same character. He plays Tom Cruise in like 90% of his movies. And that one,
most of the time,
right?
Occasionally you get a stretch or you get something different.
Yeah. Well, so we're recording this on Wednesday the 19th. By the time I get this posted and people listen to it, the October horror promo for our friends at LootCrate.com will have passed. But in honor of the release in November that we have coming on November 18th of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the new theme here for November is magical. So ready your wands and pre-measure your positions and get ready for this November enchanting theme, magical. We've cast a powerful ancient spell to deliver you this 100% exclusive crate featuring bewitching items from Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and 80s cult classic Big Trouble in Little China. So if you go to www.lootcrate.com/FML, you can enter the code FML. You save 10% off of any new subscription. There's all kinds of cool subscriptions on there that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. There's one, there's like an animal themed one. There's a loot, there's a wearing themed one. There's the DX, which is the bigger crate. So if you go to www.lootcrate.com/FML, you can get some, save some money off a subscription and get some cool stuff. Are you a Big Trouble in Little China fan, or is that one?
I saw that in a theater when I was probably way too young to be seeing Big Trouble in Little China in a theater. And at the time, I thought it was probably about the coolest thing that I had ever seen. And I definitely hold a special place for that now.
You don't get a plot quite that bizarre these days. And sure, there's some plot holes in that movie.
No, it's a very tight script, and I think name one.
What are the odds that you'd find two green-eyed girls that meet the criteria on the same day so that you can sacrifice one and keep the other for yourself?
It's not like likely, but it's possible.
Well, it clearly was possible.
And like, it's a movie I need to revisit because I rarely see it on cable, but I remember loving it growing up, and that's one I definitely need to revisit. And so, yeah, if you're a Big Trouble in Little China fan, there's even a possibility you might have some of that in like a loot crate. Like, what better reason to sign up than that?
Yeah, I have a friend from high school who we probably watched that movie together 25 times.
Just Kurt Russell's, like, you know, shirt in that movie is, like, you still see it. They still sell replicas of it. It's quite vintage.
Now, this same friend is going to show up here with our new Jerry, with our new Tom Cruise movie, the Jack Reacher sequel. So let's get on our new movies here. So theater count's going to be somewhere in the 3,600 range. Long range forecast for it was 27 million. Rotten Tomatoes score 45%. When I looked this up earlier today, we now have a ProBoxOffice.com weekend score weekend forecast, and it's only got it at 19. What are your thoughts on Tom Cruise here this week?
Again, this is one of those movies where made about 80, like opened up around Christmas time. So like just taking the opening aside, it opened up to 15, but ended up with an okay 80 million, which that's definitely not a home run, but it's probably a double. It's not a huge hit. It's also not a bomb. The 80 million wasn't enough to justify a sequel, but it did well enough internationally that they could justify the cost and to like make another one. But besides international audiences, I don't know where the demand is coming from, but maybe for like fans of the, like the Lee Child books, I don't think there's like a bunch of pent up demand to see like another Jack Reacher movie. So it doesn't surprise me that it's trending downward.
Well, so it trended up for a little while because the long range forecast opened at 22 million, and then 3 weeks ago they bumped it to 27, and now the weekend forecast is down to this 19. I think that the thing hurting this, aside from the fact that the original, the opener, didn't do well, do you know what the last Tom Cruise movie was to open in October?
Oh, dear God. You know what? I actually do know this because I tweeted it out about the 30-year anniversary or this week. The Color of Money is the only movie I know of his that opened up in October.
Now, here you go. That same friend that I watched Big Trouble in Little China with 35 times, first rated R movie I ever saw in a theater was The Color of Money. I was 16 and Reagan was president.
And what did a 16-year-old think of The Color of Money?
You know, it was... It's Tom Cruise playing Tom Cruise, only now with a pool cue, right? And getting schooled by Paul Newman. So it was pretty good. That's a good movie. It's more, you know, in some respects, it's a Paul Newman movie more than it's a Tom Cruise movie. But
I think my first R-rated movie in a theater was 2 years earlier for Beverly Hills Cop, and I was 7. So that just think about that one for a little bit.
All right. Now, wait a minute. So is this like the rogue cousin or uncle takes you to this? Or you're like, Mom, I want to go see Beverly Hills Cop. And she's like, yeah, let's go.
I think I got dragged along probably with my parents, but I absolutely loved it. Every second of it. It was about the coolest thing that I had seen. And so, yeah, I like that a lot. But this one with Jack Reacher, I don't know who the audience is besides people of the first one. I don't think it's going to really be able to build upon it. And like you'd mentioned the reviews, and I don't think that's a huge deal. I also think The Accountant is going after a very similar audience, right, as is Girl on the Train to a lesser extent. So I think there's just a ton of competition. Like, I think the ceiling's pretty limited for Jack Reacher.
I do too. But if you happen to think that Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise, no matter what the situation is, if you really believe in that, it'll fit twice. So you could go 2 screens of Jack Reacher, 2 screens of Deepwater Horizon, and 4 screens of Middle School. Or you could do 2 screens of Jack, 4 screens of Storks, and 2 screens of Sully, if you really believed in that. I think there's some better plays out there, though.
I think if you believe that the next 2 movies we're going to talk about don't perform, there's a safe, conservative way to go with Jack Reacher. But if you just take him away from the safety net that's his Mission Impossible franchise over the last decade, with the only one that's cleared $100 million was Edge of Tomorrow, and it barely cleared $100 million. And because of its budget and the fact that The Fault in Our Stars killed it on opening weekend, he really hasn't had that just mega hit the past decade outside of Mission Impossible. I think Jack Reacher is going to fall into that same category.
Well, before we get to the two movies who I think you have to really choose between for the top end of your lineup, let's talk about the other 3 that I think are completely unplayable. So it's rare this week. We've got 6 new movies to consider, a couple of them small releases. But Keeping Up with the Joneses, if you watch enough TV, can you tell the difference between Keeping Up with the Joneses commercial and a Masterminds commercial anymore?
No, and I don't think I'm the only person in the FML community to make that mistake. Unless you can convince me that it's going to make more than like the $6.5 million that Masterminds made 3 weeks ago, like I just don't see any reason to play it. It looks like kind of just that generic generic action spy comedy that was kind of in vogue in the 90s. It just feels very dated. Like, there's nothing about the marketing that looks funny to me. Like, I'm staying away.
I am too. So despite the fact that it's going to be in 3,000 theaters, its Rotten Tomatoes score is not well, and I just think the confusion in the market's going to hurt this one. Now, our two small releases, though. So first one, I'm not ashamed. Theater count is in 500 or so, but Pure Flix, what do you know about this distributor?
Besides, I mean, obviously, when a few years ago when movies were starting to like make the faith-based audience, like studios realized that there is a market for these movies. They got into the business solely for that. They've had maybe, I'd say, minor success with God's Not Dead 2, I should say. Woodlawn did very modest business, but it's just not putting up huge numbers. And this film, which was supposed to be a wider release initially, it's now down to about 500 screens, which means I think they're fulfilling a theatrical commitment before they put it on VOD. So at that screen count, like, I think it has to get to an unrealistic number. Like, I just don't see any reason to play it. And I was not familiar with this movie prior till this morning. I read what it's about, and it's a bit of a downer, and especially with so much competition out there, like, I see no reason to play it.
Yeah, it's got to get up in like the 2 to 4 million range to. Well, it's got to get in like the 2 million range to even consider it as a filler. 4 million or so, even higher, for it to consider best performer.
Which I think the only Pure Flix movie to do that was God's Not Dead 2, which made about 7 million. But that was a sequel to a popular movie, whereas this is an original title. I just don't see it.
Well, and it had the theater count to support that. It was in 2,400 theaters. This is more like Hillsong we had a couple of weeks ago that was in 816 theaters. If you take the per theater average that Hillsong got a couple weeks ago and apply that to that 500 theaters, you're looking at like 800K for this movie.
In other words, stay away.
Now, the third one, we don't have theater counts on yet. It's at the very bottom of the list of the 15 movies we have to choose from this week. It's called Denial, which I had never heard of before this week. Last week, it was in just 96 theaters, and it only had a 4,300 per theater average, which that alone tells me it's unplayable.
I mean, I've heard about the movie because it seems like they're really trying to get Rachel Weisz and Timothy Spall Oscar nominations, and I think they're trying to beat the flood of potential awards movies that are going to be coming out in November and December. But for a movie with like such good reviews, that 4,300, like, you know, per theater average, not great. It's the low end filler if you've got an extra screen, but I wouldn't make any kind of bold play that it's going to overperform.
Well, let's get to the tough choices this week. Talk me out of Madea.
I wish I could, but unfortunately, like, my lineup right now, I'm leading it with 4 screens of Madea.
Yeah, if you look back at this, right, so Tyler Perry releases are almost always in the 2,000 to 2,200 theater count range. They've got very loyal audiences. They seem to be critic-proof, so it kind of doesn't matter what the Rotten Tomatoes score for this is. Now, it's been a little while, you know, he went for a while there where he was spitting out 2 movies a year every year. It's been a little while since he's had a movie in theaters here that he directed.
I mean, it felt like there was a while, it seemed like there was a time when every month there was a movie that Mr. Multi-Hyphenate was just writing, producing, directing, and starring. When I was writing my column, I realized it's been almost over, like, 2.5, almost 3 years since he's done it, and which, by his, like, standards, is a very extended, like, layoff.
Well, so here's the thing to give you pause. The last Tyler Perry directed release was The Single Moms Club. It only opened in just under 1,900 theaters, and it only did $8 million in its opening weekend in March of 2014.
Totally understood on that one, but I think it's a situation where you have to look at his little subgenre, and you have to look at these 6 Madea movies. Where if you look at the average of those, it's about 26.6 million for the 6 Madea movies. They're coming out in a similar amount of screens that Madea Halloween is coming out in. And the most recent was December 2013, where Madea Christmas only opened up to 16. That's the lowest in the series. But even if I think that's probably going to be about the floor for Halloween. Even at that price, it's still super competitive. And I think in a weird way, just having this like 2.5 year layoff from these types of movies absence could make like the heart grow fonder for his core audience. I think Halloween's going to do pretty well. I've got it in like the mid to upper teens here. I also think it could probably give Jack Reacher a run for the top spot, although I've got Jack Reacher slightly ahead.
PearlBoxOffice.com not only agrees with you, but goes even bolder because they've got this film at 19.5 beating Jack Reacher at 19.
That I think it's definitely going to be close. Gun to my head, I would go with Jack Reacher, but if we're talking on Monday morning, I wouldn't be surprised if Madea pulled it out.
Now, price-wise, though...
it's just they're daring us to take it. It's almost impossible to ignore it.
They're daring you to put it in four screens. What before we talk about our horror sequel, what fillers do you like to put with it? Because I've got a favorite.
I was like any other week, I would have liked The Accountant, but I just think Jack Reacher is just too much. Like it's going after the exact same audience, so I think that's not going to have a great hold. The one thing that I thought, because we're going to get to Ouija in a little bit, is the only horror movie out here. But Miss Peregrine, it's not a horror movie per se, but maybe like, you know, just Tim Burton's aesthetic. It could get a little bit of a Halloween bump since it's the only thing that's kind of even in the spirit of Halloween. I think it's priced reasonably. I think it could be in there. And otherwise, I've got Four Madea, and right now I have Two Magnificent Seven, Two Deepwater Horizon. So I don't love anything yet, but I'm leaning a little bit towards Miss Peregrine. I got to run the numbers.
Now, I like Storks a little bit better because it's had kind of this long tail to it. And if it drops only 35%, which is what the ProBoxOffice.com guess is for it, you can fit four screens of Madea, three screens of Storks, and one screen of Sully. Or you can go four screens of Madea, two screens of Storks, and two screens of Middle School.
And I could definitely see Storks because there's no other like direct family competition. We have five new releases this week, but none of them are going after that family audience. So Storks is really the lone option out there. So I could definitely see like making a play for that.
Now, the other one you could consider, if you think The Accountant is going to have some legs, and I don't like that for the same reasons that you just listed out, you could go with three screens of Madea, one of The Accountant, and four screens of Storks. So if you think Storks will do even better, that might be a little bit of a hedge play there.
If not for Jack Reacher, I would like The Accountant, but just not this week.
All right. Okay, so let's talk horror. Let's talk Ouija 2 here.
Again, Ouija 2, obviously 2014, the same weekend as when the original came out, made over $19 million, very successful. They're hoping lightning strikes twice. But instead of going just kind of for the quick and dirty sequel, I thought it was interesting. They've kind of classed it up and given it the Conjuring treatment, and they've made it a period piece. And so far, like, again, not all the reviews are in. I think this number is going to go down, but polling a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, which surprises me quite a bit, which leads me to believe like maybe this movie's a little bit better than people are expecting.
Yeah, that surprised a lot of people as that began to emerge here early in the week. So much so that the Pro Box Office, they had this in its long range forecast. It had it at 12 and then it dropped it to 9.5. And now its weekend forecast is now at 13.
Which I like kind of like the low to mid teens. I don't think it's going to like, you know, match or exceed its predecessor. But I think that's part of like what I mentioned earlier about all these 2016 movies of the sequels just failing to live up to the originals. I don't think it's going to get to that number, but I still think it's going to be profitable and getting that low to mid range. And I also think it's going to be a solid play in the coming weeks, because especially next week when no other horror movies are coming out. Inferno is the only new competition. I think Ouija could also be a relevant play next week, depending on how it's priced. But I think you could play it five times, so I think it really does come down to between Madea and Ouija. But I think to play Ouija, you have to really think that Madea is just going to underperform and fall below, be the lowest grossing in the Madea series.
You do have to, well, not quite the lowest grossing in the Madea series, but it right in that area. So if you think Ouija it can even outperform what Pro Box Office does, if you think it can get to 15, let's say, then that means you think Madea is going to get below like 17.9. 17.8 is what you think Madea is going to do in order for Ouija to be a better best performer play. Now, if you think that, like you just said, it fits five times, and then it actually fits pretty nicely with three screens of Storks as well, or you could go with two screens of Storks and a Deepwater Horizon if you want. But if you I mean, think about this. We're not going to get any Thursday numbers off of the Madea movies if that trend is
Madea movies, they're critic proof. I think Thursday night numbers don't mean anything if they're even running it. So Madea, you really have to go with just what's come before. Whereas at least with Ouija, you're going to have some indication coming out of Thursday night.
Now, my research at least, and if someone else found some, please correct me. I couldn't find Thursday numbers for any of the Tyler Perry movies. I think just as part of the release strategy, they don't do the Thursday previews.
I don't think they do either, and even if they did, like, I don't know how much that would tell us.
Now, last week in my column, I made the idiotic mistake of looking at the opening day column when analyzing the Thursday numbers instead of the Thursday number column in the HSX Sanity data set. But this week, I actually looked at the correct column, and there's a couple of interesting comps here that create a lot of a gray area for you. So Woman in Black 2 had a Thursday preview number of 1.5 million on its way to a 15 million opening weekend in January of 15. And Sinister had a $1 million Thursday on its way to an 18 million full weekend in October of 14.
So it sounds like if we get to seven figures, we're in good shape. If you decide to play Ouija.
If you just, well, and if it gets above two, then maybe it's going to blow it out and, you know, get up into the high teens or low 20s. I mean, nobody's saying that, but that Thursday number is going to be the indicator of whether it's going to completely blow it out, and regardless of what Madea does. Otherwise, you have to think that Madea is going to do sub 18 if you want Ouija to be playable.
Part of me, like, you know, wants it to get put up that huge number because it makes an easy decision. The other part of me, like, I just kind of want to go with what I have, but that's the fun part of the fun of the game.
It is. That's why we play the games. All right, well, there's still some time left to vote in that Tom Cruise bracket. I think my Lestat is probably going out the window. Jerry Maguire would probably be my second choice. But
you can get on Twitter and you can campaign for this all and try and get, you know, like, just try and convince the rest of the community they're with you.
All right. Otherwise, that's going to do it here for week 8 of the Fantasy Movie League fall season. You can find me on Twitter at NerdGuru. And Patrick, how about yourself?
You can find me on Twitter at the Box Office Guy.
You can still get Fantasy Movie League gear, like the shirt I have, at fantasymovieleagueshop.com. You can look for news on Twitter from the league at FML_movies. You can do searches on either Facebook or on iTunes for Fantasy Movie League. Good luck, everyone. Until next time.
This has been the Fantasy Movie League podcast. Come join us and play for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com.